name's Tony Castaneda, and it's time for the January 6, 2022 edition of the 8 o'clock Buzz. And as you may know by now, this is the one-year anniversary of the, what shall we call it, insurrection, coup attempt, whatever, the attack on the United States Capitol by thousands of Donald Trump supporters who were questioning the results of the election of 2020, and surprise, those people are still questioning the results of the 2020 election. On today's show, I'll be speaking with our good friend and your second congressional U.S. Representative Mark Pocan, and we'll get his thoughts on, first of all, maybe talk a little bit about what was going on a year ago, and we'll talk about where we're at now. Mark Pocan. Mark, good morning.
Good morning, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for agreeing to come on. Well, this is the one-year anniversary of the armed insurrection, the invasion, the attack on the U.S. Capitol by a large contingent of Donald Trump supporters. You were in Washington, D.C. that day. You were not at the Capitol, but can you just tell me a little bit about, if you don't mind, go back a year ago and tell me how you saw things unfolding on that day, if you could.
Sure. Well, I was just across the street in my office. We were preparing for them to challenge Wisconsin's Electoral College votes that day. Seven states were expected to be challenged, so the Wisconsin Democrat delegation was going to lead that hour. But, it's what's the most odd, Tony, is that day everyone, Democratic, Republican alike, spoke with outrage, spoke clearly about what was happening. And here we are a year later, and people have gone silent or outright changed their tune to complete lies, especially given this is all on video. We've all seen it with our eyes. That day, colleagues of mine, Republicans from Wisconsin, were on TV saying, Donald Trump, call off your supporters, and now you can't hear them say a syllable about what happened on January 6th. And, I think that's the real tragedy is, this was an attack on our republic, on the democracy itself, when you have people try to do an armed insurrection. The first, by the way, since the War of 1812, where there was a breach on the U.S. Capitol. And to watch people now in Congress call it another tourist day in Washington, to completely whitewash what happened, to not want to participate in a panel to figure out exactly what happened, because this will be a scar on our nation's history. That's the most, sad part of it all is, this was a moment that kind of unified people on that day. And then, ever since then, the Republican Party, has proven that it's less of a political party and more of a cult of an individual, Donald Trump, and, whatever he says goes.
Yeah, well, as you mentioned, people were singing a different tune on that day. Everybody, and we saw, we saw them on TV. We saw them talk. We saw them cower, the Republicans I'm talking about. They were singing a different tune a year ago. What has happened in between that time where they're just kind of like, not mentioning it, or it's not that big of a thing? And I guess a lot of the thread, if you will, is that they're even saying it now. Well, it really wasn't that bad. They thought it was then. What has changed within a year? Why are they singing a different tune now?
Yeah. So I mean, we've all seen it and heard what happened, and everyone is defying their eyes, their ears, and their brains in order to now follow the narrative that Donald Trump has given that day, because obviously what we're trying to figure out is, was there any complicity between Donald Trump or some of his supporters and members of Congress and what actually occurred. But what we've watched is this, devolution. People are so afraid in the Republican Party of Donald Trump because he carries such influence in the primary process of the Republican Party that, I've watched members grow silent. I've watched members lose their vertebrae one by one. I've watched Republican leadership be the opposite definition of leadership by not standing up for what's right, but now cowering to Donald Trump. And, you know, it just really shows that what's happened to the Republican Party. It's a cult of an individual. Donald Trump still pulls the strings. He acts like a mafia don to any Republican that challenges him by, you know, supporting their opponents in Republican primaries. And because of it, you know, we're really not operating like the democracy we need to.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned on that day that you, along with some of the other Wisconsin representatives from the Democratic Party, you guys were in your offices because you were facing a challenge, because it was Wisconsin Republicans that were trying to seat a different slate of members of the electorate. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because it seems that these folks might have been almost complicit with the plans of Donald Trump and his people in terms of trying to halt the certification of Joe Biden's victory by saying that in Wisconsin we're going to have a different body of electoral candidates coming from the Republicans. Can you talk a little bit about what that was about?
Well, you know, clearly after Donald Trump lost by 7 million votes, which, by the way, Tony, is one of the biggest losses of anyone, running for president, he decided that if you can't win it with votes, you're going to win it with corruption. And, you know, he called around to Republican secretaries of state to try to put stops on the election. He called to Republican members of Congress to try to object to seven states, Wisconsin being one, so that he thought he could overturn those results and then put them somehow in his column, even though he didn't win the popular votes there. And, you know, that's what we were preparing. So Gwen Moore, Ron Kind, and I are the three Democrats from Wisconsin. We were going to be leading that hour. I was all prepared to read all sorts of Republicans' own words about how the elections were fair in Wisconsin that day. In fact, I was going to ask if I could speak from the Republican side of the floor since I was going to be quoting so many Republicans. I was getting ready for what we had to do to make our point, and that's when it all happened. And we were under lockdown. Most of our information, honestly, came in from CNN and MSNBC. We had on TV because we weren't getting a lot of emails communication. You know, it's a day I'll never forget. The most important thing, though, is we went back at the end of all of it and got our business done. And I think that was important, because if we hadn't, they would have in some way won. And instead, we made sure not only did they not win in having a coup, but they were crushed in their results also that they were trying to get didn't happen. And I think, you know, again, that was imperative for us to get done that day.
Can you describe, were you able to look on out your window at the Ellipse? Did you see this large crowd of Trump supporters gathering, around the Capitol that day and around your office? I mean, did you see that crowd at all?
Well, two things, Tony. One, I happened to have just moved that month to the seventh floor of Longworth, which is the top floor, and you can walk out your window to the roof, to the front, and I did that, and I saw thousands of people on both sides of the Capitol storming it, right? So I actually had a very unique perspective of watching the attack at some points, you know, during the day. But also, you know, on my floor, on one end of the hall is my good friend Ilhan Omar, who many Republicans love to hate simply because of what she believes in and her religious beliefs. And on the other end of the hallway is Matt Gaetz, who's one of the leading folks who the insurrectionists love. So, you know, we were prepared if they did breach the building, we all were under lockdown, but we very likely would have had some activity up on our floor. And, you know, all those things were kind of going through our minds that day.
Okay. So as you saw things unfolding, did you think that it was going to turn into what it turned into? I mean, I remember at the start of the rally and watching it on TV, and I took off. I had things I had to do, and I was like, well, they're not going to take over the U.S. Capitol. There's no way that's going to happen. And I had also been a witness in watching Black Lives Matter's protest in Washington, D.C. just a month or so earlier. And, there seemed to be very heavily armed and riot prevention clothed policemen and National Guardsmen guarding all the entrances to the Capitol and also other monuments, including, you know, the Lincoln Memorial and whatever. what did you think in terms of the preparation of U.S. Capitol Police and the people that were there tasked to prevent and protect the U.S. Capitol?
Yeah, well, like you, I never thought what occurred would occur either. And unfortunately, I think too many people thought that. You look back at it, and if a sitting president is inviting thousands and thousands of his supporters to Washington, D.C. for a protest, our Capitol Police probably should have been better prepared. And they weren't, and they didn't have a lot of staff that day. On top of it, who would have ever thought a sitting commander-in-chief, the head of the United States government, the president, would also stay silent as all this unfolded. In fact, at points, making it harder for the National Guard to actually respond and be there to stop things. None of that, even in a novel, I would have thought was a credible, place to start writing from. And now we know that's going to go down in history. Donald Trump is not only losing the biggest loss by a number of votes, but also for being the worst loser in our history. And yet, look at today, how much power Donald Trump still has over Republicans. It's sad because, there are good Republicans I used to serve with from Wisconsin, like Reed Ribble and Tom Petri, who also are outraged at what they're seeing happen. And the difference is they're no longer in office and they can speak more freely. But to watch, even the people I have to serve with, say nothing. Ones who spoke out very aggressively on January 6th, it's pretty stunning that, they've been able to somehow not stand up for the institution of Congress, much less anything else.
As more and more information is coming out of the Select Commission on what happened on January 6th a year ago, it seems more and more that this is I'm going to call it a coup attempt. Would you agree? I mean, what do you think about classifying what happened a year ago at the U.S. Capitol as an attempted coup? Do you think that's what was going on here?
Yeah, that is my belief. However, I think the way we actually get to the facts is through this commission. And remember, it was delayed about 6 months because Republicans played around that they were going to participate and finally refused to. Fortunately, a couple Republicans found a few vertebrae and were able to join and do their jobs, and I commend them for doing that because it should have been a nonpartisan effort, a joint effort to get this done. But, I think the real test is going to be these subpoenas. The fact that under Donald Trump, it's okay to lie and to cheat and steal, and these people are not going to show up to a legal subpoena. Well, I certainly hope the Department of Justice throws their behinds in jail if they don't do that, because we have to enforce legal subpoenas for Congress to do the work it has to for the American people, and we need to know what's happened. Fortunately, some of the little information we have gotten certainly is showing there's some inside job perspectives on this, and that's what we need to know. But again, I can't emphasize enough, the last time the U.S. Capitol was breached by an attack was the War of 1812. That is significant no matter what party you belong to, no matter who you liked and who you voted for president. That goes above individuals, above political parties. It's about our national history. And if you don't care about the Republic and you don't care about our democracy, you have to care about what happened on January 6th if you are a true citizen, in my opinion, of the United States.
Mm-hmm. Now, your colleague, Representative Ruben Gallegos from Arizona, just yesterday was critical of Merrick Garland in the Department of Justice and saying that they're not acting quick enough, that they're not, like a lot of us, we're like, well, what the heck? It seems pretty clear that this wasn't a coup attempt. And yes, you're arresting and you're charging the grunts, the pawns, the people that were actually did this action. But what about the planners? How do you feel about Merrick Garland and the Department of Justice in terms of their pace or their approach to what happened last year? Do you think they should be moving quicker? Do you think that indictments should be coming down already on some of the leaders and possibly even towards Donald Trump?
Well, I do think that they should be enforcing subpoenas immediately, right? That should be a no-brainer. I think the challenge that they're having that I disagree with is, some of the people that were in the government at the time do they have any sorts of immunity through our federal laws? And I think that's what's slowing it down for them. Don't forget, Steve Bannon wasn't. They did act quickly on him. And, you know, we need to do that, though, with everyone, because we can't just prolong this process into years and years. We need to get the answers right now, because it's important for the public to know what happened. It's important for us to know what happened. Just this week, we had Capitol Police and the Sergeant of Arms sit down with us and talk about new security procedures and other things they're putting in place that they've learned because of January 6th. We need to be just as swift in dealing with this from the perspective of the Department of Justice.
Okay, we're speaking with our own U.S. Congressman, Representative Mark Pocan, 2nd Congressional District, which encompasses, of course, Madison and central Wisconsin here. We're talking about what happened a year ago at the U.S. Capitol when a mob of thousands of Trump supporters, they took over the U.S. Capitol and tried to disrupt a formal and the formal passing over of government from one administration to another. What do you think about what's going on there? I mean, like, only about 9% of Trump voters think that Biden won fair and square still. 75% of Trump voters and most Republicans believe the election was rigged and stolen still to this day. Only about nationwide, about a little bit more than half of the people in this country trust their states to accurately count the votes in the next presidential election. And even Biden voters are expressing skepticism that the next election is going to be counted fair and square. What do you have to say to that sentiment that's being expressed by a lot of people in this country?
Well, and that's the sadness of Donald Trump ever becoming president. And not only was he the most ill-equipped to be president, and I think he'll go down in history as the worst president, especially given how he handled the COVID crisis in this country, but he has no problem whatsoever with outright lying about anything, including things as important as voting. And because of that, you see people still, that's why I describe the Republican Party as a cult rather than a political party these days, you know, believing whatever he says, even if it defies their eyes, their ears, or their brains. And, you know, that's the problem. Donald Trump will say and do anything for Donald Trump. And I don't understand why others don't see it. I do understand, you know, we're at a point in our history where, you know, there's much in society that's changing, and many people are slow to accept change. Donald Trump found ways to kind of jump on people's xenophobic and racist natures in many cases, and that provided some security. So, you know, there's a strong feeling by some, by a certain percent of the population, for him. But others are smarter and should know better. And it's just really, again, sad to watch what, you know, I've been doing this, what, for 30-some years, Tony? You know, I've been able to work with people who disagree with me, but never people who actually disagree with what they see and what the facts are so blatantly as they are now, because they accept whatever their leader in exile says.
What of the role of social media, especially the giant outlets, in, I guess, continuing to allow misinformation to be spread, not only about the election, but about other things? I'm thinking way back to 2020, the Gore Bush election. Social media was not that big at that time, but what about now? And what do you think? Do you think there should be constraints put on the big social media giants in terms of allowing this misinformation to be spread?
Yeah, I mean, the simple answer, Tony, would be yes, but I also have to say that with a giant asterisk, that I am a strong believer of the First Amendment, and I think we have to be very careful that whatever we do doesn't take us into a place that runs counter to that. However, when some of the outright racism and Nazism and go down the list of things that cannot just be allowed to go unchecked, the lies, they do need to have some we need some way to make sure that they have some controls over those platforms as well. And, you know, it's one thing to ban Marjorie Taylor Greene for her lies on Twitter, but and Donald Trump, to their credit, eventually on Twitter. but, you know, I see plenty of it every single day that people are believing, and I get it back from people via that social media. And at some point, we do need better checks and balances within that system. But as we do that, we have to respect the First Amendment as well. And I do think that's going to be a bit of a challenge.
Representative Mark Pocan, what do you think of Republican attempts in places like the state of Wisconsin now to put curbs and roadblocks in terms of the electoral process itself, the elections themselves? What do you think of their attempts to, first of all, in the state of Wisconsin, to question what's going on with our electoral system in the state of Wisconsin, which it turns out, you know, it appears that the 2020 election was one of the most fairly run and efficient elections of all time, especially conducted during a mass pandemic. But we've still got Robin Vossett and hiring Gableman to have this inquiry into the electoral process and what happened in Wisconsin. What do you think about that?
Sure. Well, first of all, I think it's important to note Wisconsin's not unique in that 49 states now have had over 500 bills introduced last I heard, and I'm sure that number's up, to make it harder for people to vote. So this is something that unfortunately is widespread among the Republicans. However, Wisconsin's situation is unique because not only is there the efforts to make it harder for people to vote, but also this circus train of an effort by Mike Gableman to try to look at the election. You know, I think when Kathy Bernier, the senator who's in charge of that committee in the state Senate, said it's time for this to be done, you know, the election, we've got the information, we know where we're at, she spoke the truth, and, you know, she'll probably get in trouble for saying that. But the reality is, I mean, Mike Gableman has made this a farce. You know, he has been incompetent at every level. You know, really, this would be a great comic tragedy to write at the end of all of this. But, you know, these efforts are just to make Donald Trump happy and to keep the Republicans protected more than anything else. And again, that's just sad because you're right. We have very clean elections. In fact, you know, there's a, as you know, PolitiFact rates many things we say, and many politicians don't always love or agree with how they say things. But I got one of their rare truths when I said you're more likely to get struck by lightning than commit in-person voter fraud. And the reason they gave it one of their very rare truths is because it's true. We don't have voter fraud like that. And, you know, all of this is literally trumped up, no pun intended, in order to say that we need to have changes in how we do elections. And, you know, there's always ways to make elections more efficient and better. But the goal should be to have more people voting, not fewer, and to make sure that we're protecting the individuals, what should be a right to vote, as opposed to any other measure that a government may have.
Mm-hmm. Where do we go today, a year after the attack by Trump supporters of the U.S. Capitol and the invasion there and the attempt to delay or obstruct the normal functioning of our government? Where are we now? What does the future hold?
Well, one, never forget, right? You know, we can't let their revisionist history change what we saw and heard and experienced on January 6th, because it's too important for our democracy. It's too important for the institution of Congress, regardless of political affiliation. So I think that's really important. But two, you know, hold those accountable who spread the lies. You know, we have one U.S. senator who's been amazing, Tammy Baldwin, as she always is. And we have another U.S. senator who's been one of the main purveyors of many of these falsehoods. And, you know, I think the best way that you can, you know, have your voice heard is about who is serving in office to represent you. And if people are going to lie, cheat, or steal in order to stay in office, we need to use our vote, which is the one thing that they right now still aren't able to fully take away. We need to make sure we use that voice and get out there and do our civic duty.
What of Republican attempts in the state of Wisconsin to maintain and hold power through gerrymandered maps? I mean, you know, and other roadblocks to allowing people to vote. What do you think about what's going on in the state of Wisconsin, and what should people be concerned about? What should people be doing to end this? In a way, it's one-party rule. Fortunately, we've elected a Democratic governor who's able to veto a lot of these proposed bills by the Republicans in our state legislature. But how do things change in Wisconsin? It almost seems impossible, I guess, to make these changes that need to be done.
Well, this will be my, I believe, fourth redistricting I've gone through at some level of government. And maybe I'm off by, no, it's my fourth one, yes. I can tell you that, you know, one thing we have to figure out how to do is take redistricting out of the hands of politicians and put it into the citizens. You know, Governor Evers attempted with his public citizens panel that he had to draw lines, but it had absolutely no teeth. Therefore, it really couldn't do what it needed to do. But having a citizens panel with real resources to be able to put together maps competently and have them draw districts like they do in Iowa, like they do in California, like they do in some other places, I think is imperative. Because, you know, I can just tell you as an elected official, as a human being, it is hard when you come to that point. I've watched a lot of irrational thinking, even by people in my own party. Who say, well, you know, my cousin lives in this town. I really want him in my district. No, that's not how you draw lines.
Right.
But you need to have a fair process that's laid out that follows the guidelines that you can have fair elections. We don't have that right now in Wisconsin at all because of the Republican legislature, legislative majority. And my guess is because the Supreme Court's going to draw lines, we're going to still have gerrymandered lines for another decade. But we've got a decade to get this right. And if we don't, I think we'll have real problems.
Mm-hmm. Now, some of your own colleagues, state representatives, congressional representatives and senators, appear that they might be complicit in some of the planning for the takeover of the U.S. Capitol. There were photos from days leading up to January 6th of a year ago with them giving large groups of their constituents tours of the U.S. Capitol. It appears that some of them were in contact as the takeover was going on, as you guys were barricading yourselves inside the Capitol. But they had contact with Donald Trump and with the planners of this insurrection, if you will. Do you think these people, first of all, should be charged, criminally charged, if it's proven that they played a role in the planning of this takeover? And that would also affect the balance of power at the U.S. Congress, right? So, first of all, do you think that if it's proven that some of your colleagues were involved with the planning of this attack on the U.S. Capitol, that they should be removed from office and criminally charged?
Well, absolutely, and you know that's why we have to have subpoenas actually enforced because we need people to tell us the truth. If they don't tell us the truth, then they're, you know, liable right there. And we do need to know who knew what and who was involved with the various actions. And, you know, unfortunately, I do think there were some people on the inside, whether it be Congress or the White House, who were likely involved. And, you know, we need to get that information for the sake of our republic. And the only way you can really hold people accountable is to use the law to its fullest extent for anyone who was involved.
So how are you going to be spending today? What's going to go on at the U.S. Capitol? What's going to happen today? What are you guys got any sort of events or anything or press conferences to talk about the events of a year ago?
Actually, this is in district week, so I'm actually here in Wisconsin.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So, but what I'm going to be doing is this afternoon, we're doing a media availability with all media to be able to talk about this and anything else. And then tonight we're doing a Facebook Live as well, I believe at 6:30 on our Facebook page to answer questions from people. So what we're trying to do is just make sure that we're engaging as many people as possible in this conversation and in just general conversations about what we're trying to do in Congress, about where we are with COVID. You know, this is a challenging time on many, many levels. And, you know, I feel my job is to make sure I'm trying to communicate in every way possible.
To end here, I'd like to say again that there's a lot of people that are concerned for our democracy in the United States, in the future of it. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, a lot of times during the Trump administration, I compared what was going on to the movie Idiocracy. I don't know if you ever saw it.
It's
kind of a dumb comedy,
yes.
But it's I felt like we were on that slope because, you know, Donald Trump as a reality show star, as his experience in life was really kind of leading us down that. And I still worry that that's a possibility. Just as you mentioned, all the people who think the election results weren't accurate, people who are now, you know, seeing different things than their eyes and ears told them about January 6th. I mean, I do worry that if we become so hyper tribal in how we operate, that that could be very dangerous. And if we're not getting things done for the American people, you know, then that's the fall of our republic in many ways. You know, that's our responsibility to get things done. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons to have caution. At the same time, I do believe more in the American people than any kind of political leaders. And if people just stand up and do their own critical thinking and speak out and most importantly, participate by voting, you know, we have more people who agree with us on the values than they do. Part of why they do these voting efforts to make it harder for people to vote and do gerrymandering is because they're trying to pick their voters rather than the other way around. If we use our vote as our power, I do think we can make sure that we get back to the path we need to.
All right. U.S. Representative Mark Pocan. Mark, thanks a lot for being on the show this morning. And I guess we'll just continue to watch what's happening. Should we feel impatient that nothing's going to come out of this Select Commission and or what?
No, I think it is important that we get the subpoenas actually, you know, followed. And I think if we can get to that point, more information should provide us with a more accurate picture. The problem is some people will still not believe their ears or eyes. They're going to believe Donald Trump. The real test is at what point do the Republicans realize Donald Trump becomes a liability for them rather than an asset? And then, they will throw him to the side at that point, and then maybe we'll be able to become more of what we always were. But it's going to take a little more than Republican leadership right now in state legislatures and in Congress are ready for.
All right. U.S. Representative Mark Pocan. Mark, thanks so much for being on the show this morning and for the work that you continue to do in terms of representing us here. Thank you very much.
No, thank you. Thanks for having me, Tony.
All right. U.S. Representative Mark Pocan.